been a big thing weighing on my mind all season, and it's great to finally consider it done.
Keegan Randall secures the World Cup Sprint Championship. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 7th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Iditarod leaders like Mitch Seavey talk about how the race has gone so far.
If these 16 ponies can't haul my little behind up a hill, then I got the wrong dog team. So I just let them do their job.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
A diseased ringed seal has turned up in southeast Alaska, far outside the animal's normal range. Last week, a sluggish seal with hardly any fur hair was found hauled out along shore near Yakutat. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration sent the seal to Anchorage, where it was euthanized and an autopsy was performed. The seal was found to be suffering from the same mysterious disease that is affecting ice seals and walruses on the North Slope and is in the northern Bering Sea. Julie Spiegel is a spokesperson for NOAA. She says it's worrisome. The disease may be spreading.
Of concern, of course, but it may just be that this one particular seal was so far outside its range that perhaps the disease hasn't actually spread this far, and just the one seal was an anomaly.
This is the first ringed seal ever found in the Gulf of Alaska. NOAA has been investigating the cause of the unusual marine mammal disease since last summer. The illness has killed more than 60 seals. In walrus, the disease appears to be less severe and no deaths have been attributed to it. Spiegel says the investigating team is making progress towards solving the mystery. Last month, they ruled out radiation as a potential cause, but she says there aren't any easy answers.
It's been a real challenge to try to nail this one down. There have been some viruses that we have completely ruled out and some bacterial causes that we have completely ruled out. So we're just still testing for others.
The illness has been declared an unusual mortality event, which frees up more funding to continue the investigation. But Spiegel says some UME cases are never resolved. She is asking hunters to report any sick-looking seals they encounter this spring to NOAA. Keegan Randall clinched the World Cup sprint title today. The Anchorage skier broke a ski during the classic sprint in Drammen, Norway this morning, but she still managed to place 12th and secure a spot in skiing history, APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Excitement and relief. Those are the two emotions Keegan Randall was feeling after securing the World Cup sprint title.
It's been a big thing weighing on my mind all season, and been a lot of work going into it, but it's great to finally consider it done.
Getting it done meant finishing the classic sprint in Norway with only one ski. Randall broke the binding off her ski during the semifinals. She describes the conditions as gnarly, with a mix of rain and snow. Randall says she figures she must have tweaked it pushing hard on one of the uphills.
And then as I was going down the downhill, I think my kick wax stuck a little bit, and I went to catch my balance, and that's when the binding just kind of broke in half and ripped out of the ski. So all I could do was get up, pick up my ski, pick up the piece of binding, and I literally scootered on one foot most of the rest of the way around the track until I eventually got a new ski from my coach about 200 meters before the finish. But by then, you know, the rest of the group is gone.
Becoming the World Cup sprint champion was Randall's number one goal for the season. She mapped out the plan to accomplish it last spring with her Alaska Pacific University coach, Eric Flora. Then she made steady progress towards that goal this winter, winning two World Cup races and making it on the podium in four others. She says during the season, she tried to focus on each race one at a time and not pay too much attention to the big picture.
Mid-season, you know, things were going well. I've been skiing in the red bib almost every weekend. And as we were getting closer to the end now, it was getting a little bit closer. And, you know, I'd had a couple falls and things like that. So it was still something I felt very confident about and wanted to, you know, really race hard all the way to the end. But it is a nice feeling to know that that's kind of done now and I can just kind of enjoy these last few races.
Randall is the first female cross-country skier from the U.S. to ever capture a World Cup title. U.S. skier Bill Koch won the overall World Cup championship in 1982. For the honor, Randall will receive a crystal globe. She says she's excited to bring it back to Alaska.
They've been giving them out in all the ski disciplines for a long, long time. I think we've had one other U.S. skier win it in history, and that was back in 82 before I was born. I've always seen the alpine skiers, you know, from the U.S. win them, and I've seen, you know, other racers on the Nordic circuit get one, so it'll be really cool to have one.
Randall is currently in fourth place overall in the World Cup standings. She's hopeful she can maintain that position. She says there are five more races to go before the season's over. The final sprint, a classic race, will take place next week in Stockholm, Sweden. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
About 34 teams are taking their mandatory 24-hour break in Takotna during this year's Iditarod sled dog race. The church and other buildings are filled with sleeping mushers. Two Rivers musher Allie Zirkel was the first to reach the checkpoint late last night. She says so far she hasn't had any surprises.
Luckily nothing, which is why I've had a smooth run. Nothing has jumped out at me. Nothing has really taken me by surprise. My leader, Kito, has made the perfect decisions. There were wrong trails in different directions, and she always took the right trail, and we have had a smooth ride. The last 2 hours into here, I did carry a dog, so that slowed me down a little bit. But other than that, we have had just a perfect ride to here, which is why I'm in the place I am.
Zirkel says her dogs might also be doing well because they are so lightweight. They aren't as likely to punch through the soft snow as the larger dogs. Zirkel will leave a little after 1 a.m. on Thursday morning, a few minutes behind Mitch Seavey. Their times have been adjusted to take into account when they left Willow. Seavey says he's much further ahead in the standings this year than he usually is at this point in the race. This year he's prioritizing not only his dog's health and longevity, but also his own. He's taking more naps.
I got a half-hour nap one place and a two-hour nap another place, and I feel like a different person. I can think, I can move around, I can remember stuff. So, yeah, I'm really trying to take care of myself and not work so hard on the sled, not run and ski pole and pedal. If these 16 ponies can't haul my little behind up a hill, then I got the wrong dog team. So I just let them do their job, and then I'm better doing my job when we get to a stop and take care of them.
Defending champion John Baker also says he's doing better at this stage in the race than normal.
It's actually gone smoother for me this year than most of the other years. I'm used to being here in between 10 and 20th position and a little bit behind with lots of time to make up, so things went smooth this year, so I'm in good shape here.
But he says his large dogs are in lower spirits because of the warm temperatures.
As it gets cooler, they're probably a little bit more comfortable, but I don't mind the warm temperatures. It sure fits for me better than the cold.
Longtime musher Dee Dee John Rowe says the weather is having mixed effects on her team and the trail. She says the snow has been helpful so far, but the wind has caused problems. And she ran into trouble before Nikolai and broke her sled.
Well, for me, the most difficult, where I've had the most trouble, was around Tin Creek. And I busted a runner there, and I mean, the dogs were just like ping-ponging me off the trees out there. And it was on dirt, so you couldn't really hold the sled back, and I had 16 dogs that felt really good about running there, so, you know, that was really terrifying. To be honest, there's no ride at Disney that can compare to the adrenaline rush of trying to get through that part of the trail.
Every musher is required to take a 24-hour rest and must also stop for 8 hours in White Mountain. The Boozers, Martin and Roan, pushed through Takotna and are resting 23 miles down the trail in Ophir. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, another Alaskan volcano perks up.
We are having a swarm or an episode of increased earthquake activity, and we're still in the process of evaluating the significance of that swarm.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development is instructing school districts across the state to be on the lookout for suspicious envelopes containing white powder. Department spokesman Eric Fry says four school districts have received letters in the past few days, and the Chugach and Tanana district offices received the first letters for a total of six so far. It was not immediately clear when the first letters arrived, but Fry said the FBI asked the department to notify school districts to be on the lookout for envelopes from an unknown sender in Texas with a Dallas postmark. This week, the Kenai Peninsula, Copper River, Southeast Island, and the Juneau school districts have all received similar letters. FBI Special Agent Eric Gonzalez says the FBI was called when the first four were targeted.
And we responded with state and local law enforcement as well as hazmat teams and the Postal Service to these different incidents and have collected the letters and have provided them to the labs, public health services.
Gonzalez says results from two tests found the substance was not hazardous. Tests on the other letters have not yet been concluded. School officials are being urged to leave any suspicious envelopes sealed and call the Department of Education, the FBI, or local law enforcement immediately. The Department of Education has requested that the Senate Finance Committee not release a substitute for the governor's bill setting up the mechanism to pay for the scholarship program the legislature approved in 2010. The Parnell administration says it would rather have no bill than a bad bill. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The scholarship sets up a required standard for students to follow and sets a performance level for them to meet, in exchange for which the state will pay all or part of their tuition at in-state institutions of higher learning. Since 2010, however, money for the scholarships has been appropriated on a year-by-year program. The governor's bill, HB 104, which passed the House at the end of last year's session, would have made the source of the money permanent. Education Commissioner Mike Hanley says the administration wanted to let the program run on its own for a few years before determining if any changes were necessary.
HB 104 was originally designed just to be the funding for the performance scholarship. So the concern, generally speaking, is that HB 104 is turning into something that is changing the performance scholarship before we've really had a chance to see how it's going to do.
The bill began changing as it was ready to go public in the Senate Finance Committee, and Hanley stepped in. In a letter to Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman, the commissioner said the Senate changes no longer allow the scholarships to encourage high standards from students, school districts, and parents. Specifically, the letter says the bill would create a loophole that would allow waivers for students who do not take part in distance education programs. The letter also says the new version would lower the scholarship's strict academic requirements by allowing students who get the support to have GED recognition rather than the standard high school diploma. The bill passed the House last year with a unanimous vote. Since it related only to money, the Senate referred it directly to the Finance Committee. Education Committee Co-Chair Kevin Meyer says the pending changes would likely have caused some concern at his level, since the intent of the bill had been to leave the scholarship itself alone.
We've been funding it year at a time, and personally, I think the governor's approach to funding is perfect for this year because we do have such a large surplus of money, and we could set aside a chunk for an endowment and then designate some of those funds to go to the scholarships. So, you know, when I heard it was going to finance, I thought, well, okay, that makes sense, and maybe we'll get a long-term funding figured out on this.
Finance Co-Chair Lyman Hoffman defended the changes, saying the normal procedure for a bill would have put the House and Senate versions in a conference committee where the programmatic changes would have been addressed. But that's not a risk Hanley was willing to take. He says the Senate version changes the entire intent of the bill.
Performance scholarship matching up with GED, they just don't necessarily go hand in hand. Yes, there could be some of those rare situations where a kid would qualify there. But, so I think we'd rather have it just stay in committee if it's going to stay the way it is.
There are no plans at this time to take further action to provide a permanent funding source for the scholarships. Instead, the legislature can still act to use $8 million Governor Parnell set aside in the budget this year to add this year's scholarship recipients to the program. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
There has been some increased earthquake activity at the Iliamna volcano, and the Alaska Volcano Observatory is investigating. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The Iliamna volcano is located on the western side of Lower Cook Inlet in the Lake Clark National Park and Preserve, and there have been no known historical eruptions. The Alaska Volcano Observatory issued an information statement Wednesday confirming that over the past 3 months there have been several episodes of increased earthquake activity at the volcano. However, acting scientist in charge David Schneider confirms that AVO is not changing the volcano alert level or the aviation color code.
Volcanoes typically have what we call swarms of earthquakes. Sometimes these lead to eruptive activity. Sometimes they just fade away into nothing. So at this point, the purpose of the information statement is just to call attention to the fact that we are having a swarm or an episode of increased earthquake activity. And we're still in the process of evaluating the significance of that swarm.
The scientists with the Alaska Volcano Observatory note that the increase in earthquake activity may be related to movement of magma at depth, but they can't be sure. Schneider says that's prompting plans to conduct some additional observations, including airborne gas sampling.
Typically what we do for a gas flight is there's some airborne sensors that go out, and you fly through and under the plume. With some techniques, you look through the plume, and others you actually suck the air into an analyzer on the aircraft. And then by looking at the wind speed, you can calculate how much is coming out in terms of so much per day.
In Wednesday's information statement, the Alaska Volcano Observatory points out that a similar but longer episode of increased earthquake activity occurred on the Iliamna volcano from September of 1996 to February of 1997. It's likely that the activity was related to the intrusion of new magma at depth, but it did not result in an eruption. As noted earlier, there are no known historical eruptions of the Iliamna volcano, but volcanic deposits preserved on the flanks of the volcano indicate that there have been multiple episodes of explosive activity in the past 2,500 years. Schneider says that while the volcano has never erupted, there are a couple of active vents that release volcanic gases.
And these are on the east side of the volcano. And so during times of favorable atmospheric conditions, primarily the steam and other gas can be observed from many places around Cook Inlet. And so if people happen to catch a good view of Iliamna and see steaming, they should be reassured in part that's a typical thing for Iliamna.
The Alaska Volcano Observatory has a real-time seismic network on the Iliamna volcano, and in Wednesday's information statement, AVO confirmed that they will continue to observe Iliamna carefully. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety. Operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Alaska Republicans met at locations across the state yesterday to vote on who they thought should be the Republican presidential nominee. There are still hundreds of ballots to be counted, and just 425 votes separate Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. But as Daisha Eaton of member station KSKA reports, that doesn't seem to be stopping Republican Party officials from declaring it a Romney victory.
Voters across the state filled community centers, churches, and schools Tuesday to participate in Alaska's presidential preference poll. Many voters cast their ballots at Anchorage Christian Schools.
James Holo from Anchorage. It's the first time I've voted in a primary. I voted for Mitt Romney because I think he's the one who will probably be able to beat Barack Obama. Republicans have to win this time.
And apparently many Alaskan voters felt the same way. And that was clear once the numbers started rolling in at Republican Party headquarters in Anchorage. That's the sound of the first ballot count being called into party headquarters. Yeah. Republican Party Chair Randy Redrick tallied the numbers onto a nearby envelope.
Romney has 70.
Right away, Romney was in the lead, and it stayed that way all night long. More than 13,000 people voted across the state. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Officials say it may be as late as next week before the final count is available, but they are doubtful it will change the outcome. More than 13,000 voters turned out to participate in the state's presidential preference poll. A small business class at Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka is gearing up for a commercial venture this spring. The students have organized a company, appointed officers, and sold shares of stock. Their product, which will be out soon, is an elastic $5 wristband with the words, "Living on the Edge." If all goes well, the students should earn back the money they invested in the business, plus a profit that they'll distribute to shareholders as a dividend. While this all sounds fairly typical for a high school business class, it is actually something quite innovative. The Mount Edgecombe students developed their business plan with the goal of helping Sitka's homeless population. KCAW's Robert Woolsey explains.
The wristbands read "Living on the Edge" because, as Richard Corbett, a senior from Dillingham, says, "Who knows more about living on the edge than the homeless?" Corbett is vice president of marketing for the class. He says he and other business students at the state-run boarding school wanted to use their talents to make a difference in Sitka.
I want to leave a standing footprint in the community to let people know that we care. Even though we're from out of town, we care. This is our second home. This is where we spend the most of our year. We want to see it be as good as it can be.
Homelessness in Sitka has become an increasing concern. A consortium of nonprofits, government agencies, and faith-based groups participated in a coordinated statewide event in January called Project Homeless Connect. 45 Sitkins came forward to sign up for available services, browse donated clothing, and enjoy a hot meal. Event director Mim McConnell says she and others with Sitka's Easter group were surprised and delighted when the Mount Edgecombe students invited them to visit the class to hear their pitch.
The ingenuity and creativity and just coming up with an idea like that and their generosity of wanting to help the people in Sitka that don't have what they need.
If all goes well, the project could generate up to $3,000 for Project Homeless Connect, which McConnell says might help fund a drop-in shelter in Sitka or similar support services. That's a lot of wristbands. But Kayla Merkuliev, a junior from Sitka who serves as the company's CEO, says they chose their product through research and consensus.
We took a Facebook survey, and people voted more for wristbands and body pillows, but we voted as a class, and we all chose wristband because we work as a team and we make decisions together.
The students have purchased an initial inventory of 1,200 wristbands, which they'll sell wherever they can. Sitka has any number of retail possibilities, including direct sales at craft bazaars. Merkuliev is hoping the wristband project picks up momentum of its own.
I was hoping to even maybe start a big campaign to keep on going even after this class is over and maybe start a business club. And this could be our big project and we could keep selling wristbands and keep donating money.
The students hope to get a TV spot to help launch the project, says Vice President for Public Relations Robert Nielsen, a sophomore from Anchorage. Nielsen says he's also planning on putting ads on screen in Sitka's movie theaters. As the youngest member of the management team, Nielsen expects to play a large role in fine-tuning it for success in the future.
I'll probably be the one that's examining most, see the pros and cons of what's happening, and then the bad things that are going on, you know, like, oh, we need to fix this, and then I'll see the good things too, like, oh, we need to do more of this.
And we probably will be seeing more of this. The Mount Edgecombe students have tapped into a new business model with interesting potential for hitching up the revenue-generating power of commerce with the philanthropic interests of nonprofits. It's called a B Corporation, Mim McConnell explains.
Basically, it's a corporation that it's a social model that it's built on, and the focus is altruism, is being able to help those, you know, whatever the social cause might be, helping those in need, and the whole business model is built around that concept.
B Corporations are already legal in many states, and they support a wide variety of endeavors, once exclusively the territory of nonprofits. McConnell says she's written state legislators urging them to explore bridging the commercial and nonprofit worlds in Alaska. These students, in my mind, have captured that, McConnell says, and it's really exciting. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A new service in Fairbanks will help prison inmates, their family, and friends stay better connected. Video visiting provides audio and video interface between a designated site in Fairbanks and a Colorado prison where many Alaska inmates are serving time. The Tanana Chiefs Conference and the State Department of Corrections work together to set up the program in Fairbanks. A large portion of Alaska's prison population is Alaska Native, and TCC Justice Task Force Chair Shirley Lee says video visiting is an outgrowth of a long-running effort to house inmates closer to home.
For many years, the tribes have been calling for a prison to be built in the interior to reduce the distance between the inmates and their families so that rehabilitation can occur. So we work with DOC to provide video visiting, and it's a lot better seeing somebody than just talking to them on the phone.
TCC will offer video visiting between the Al Ketzler Senior Building in downtown Fairbanks and Colorado's Hudson Correctional Facility by reservation 3 afternoons a week. Up to 4 prison-approved people can participate in the video sessions with an inmate. The 30-minute sessions are monitored by the prison. Video visiting with the Hudson Correctional Center is already offered by other organizations in several Alaska locations. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN, and you can also find more Iditarod coverage on our website. We had reports tonight from Mike Mason in Dillingham, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, and Ann Hillman from the Takotna Checkpoint on the Iditarod Trail. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
And by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Join business, civic, and government leaders from across Alaska and the nation at the 2012 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, April 19th and 20th at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. Clean energy is a $250 billion a year business worldwide, and Alaska has the potential to be a world leader in this growing field. Information at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. This message sponsored by REAP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.